T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Luis Robert
gone.
Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670. The score. Sorry, no baseball. Cubs, Reds postponed. It's been raining in the Queen City all day. They apparently thought that there was some sort of a window, but they finally called it about an hour ago. So no makeup date as of yet. What is pretty damn noteworthy, and something I was talking about at the start of the show, is Anthony Rizzo is going right after Major League Baseball, as he should. Was it Monday earlier this week? There was rain and they had the delay, so I was on for a little bit, maybe an hour and a half or so, and I was making the exact same comments that Rizzo is talking about tonight. Like, okay, who's monitoring the social distancing? They're all in the clubhouse, all these players, all these coaches, everybody. Here's Rizzo's tweet about just over an hour ago. Player safety, ? At MLB, let's sit around for 8+ hours inside the clubhouse. I'm sure I can find that somewhere in the 113-page player safety protocol. I mean, he's right. And they've done that now a couple of times this week. And they waited around for nothing. For nothing. And there was never a window all day, if you were taking a look at the Cincinnati radar. I don't know what they're thinking. I get it, they're going to try and squeeze these games. Not a lot of off days, but there was no window. Maybe an hour, it was 50% and not 100%. It's the joke, and they're going to be surprised. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, the score. Let's check in with our buddy James Fox. He was busy earlier today. He writes for Future Sox. You can follow him on Twitter at JamesFox917, and he joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. How you doing, James?
I'm good, Joe. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you jumping on. You're a friend, man. You hear I'm. I guess Joe's got a 3-4 hour show on little notice, and you offered your services, and I'm glad you did. So tell everybody listening, what did you do today, and what did you learn?
So, you know, I went over to Schaumburg Boomer Stadium. It's actually the first time I've been over there. I was actually kind of surprised at how big the stadium is, but, you know, the White Sox have their alternate site team, or, you know, whatever they're calling it. Every team's calling it something different. But, you know, the story this morning, Garrett Crochet, their first-round pick, threw, you know, he just threw like a side session. But, you know, so that was kind of interesting. Chris Getz, the farm director, talked to the media. And then, you know, Nick Madrigal, still there. Nomar Mazara is there, trying to, you know, get back into action and back as soon as he can. Andrew Vaughn's over there, you know, and then a bunch of other guys too, who, you know, some of them are a little bit noteworthy prospects, and other ones are just kind of, you know, minor league depth 4A types in case of emergency. But, you know, it kind of looks like a spring training, not really a backfield, because they are doing some live BP, but it's, you know, it's practice. They don't even have enough guys to play games against each other.
Wow. Were you surprised that Nick Madrigal is going to be available for everyone?
So, you know, I'm actually not that surprised. So, obviously, yesterday was service time manipulation day across baseball. And, you know, the Blue Jays, you know, were didn't really have any shame. They started Nate Pearson yesterday, like, on the day, right? So, some teams kind of, they'll do it this weekend. Or the Diamondbacks called up a catcher, Dalton Varsho, today. I was wondering about Madrigal, like, if he'd be in Kansas City tomorrow. And then I kind of thought about, like, the practicality of it. Like, I think it's easy for us to say, like, Madrigal probably should have been with the team to start, and we can have that conversation. But, like, will they fly him to Kansas City for these three, or will they just have him drive the 90 minutes to Milwaukee on Monday? That's probably more likely. I think he's going to be up for the majority of the rest of the season. There's not really much that he can do to make himself any better in Schaumburg. So, no, I'm not surprised, but, I tweeted that he was there, and then, I had a ton of Twitter mentions tell Rick Hahn. I'm like, Rick Hahn's not here. And, what do you want me to do? So
they know.
That was interesting, but I kind of expected to see him today.
Yeah, we all know the game that's being played. The service time was not an issue, he would be with the Major League club. And they say they're ready to win now, but can you really believe them when your best option at second base is not with the club right now? So when do the dates not matter? When can they not worry about losing any service time?
I think it was yesterday officially was the day that he can come up, like, right now. That's why people were kind of surprised, because
okay,
yesterday around baseball was the day. I believe it was to get a year of service. It's 61 of 66 days that are, like, on the baseball calendar, and that was yesterday. So if you see, like, if you notice a flurry of call-ups, that's why.
We started to see them today.
It's not just the White Sox. I mean, they're local, and, we can criticize them for it. We all understand what's happening, but, it's not just them.
Yeah, and it's the rules that they're working with. It is not them. It's just how you do business. You can go back to Chris Bryant if you want, and you can make the case that maybe Bryant's going to be mad at the Cubs and he's going to leave in free agency. I don't know. Only Chris Bryant could say how he truly feels. But why would you give up a year of service time when you stay there for 2 weeks and then we're going to get you another year? It's not a hard decision.
Yeah, and I think, a lot of people look at Nick Madrigal, right, and they say he's not going to be like Luis Robert or Eloy Jimenez, where you're worried about, that extra money on that back end. But, sure, man, it's still about principle, right? Like, the way they look at it is they could have started him last week with the club, right, and they'd get Nick Madrigal for 60 games and then five more seasons. Or they can wait and they can have him for 50, 51 games and six more seasons. So every team pretty much is going to do that just because, it doesn't really matter. It gets you the extra year, and he's not going to be that expensive probably, but it's about principle with these teams. They're not going to give up, your old show. Seven is greater than six, right? So
exactly. But you think Milwaukee, right? You think of next week?
Yeah. So, I mean, they're home Wednesday against Milwaukee, and it's not like you need to juice the home crowd, right? It's not like you're going to wait until – you don't need to wait for a home game like they've been doing, which makes sense too. But, without fans, yeah, I would think he just makes the 90-minute – somebody can drive him to Milwaukee, I think, from Schaumburg.
Joe Ostrowski with James Fox, senior editor over at Future Sox. Follow James on Twitter at JamesFox917. I want to get your reaction to the breaking news just a few moments ago, James. Here's Jeff Passan. Here's a couple tweets here. Major League Baseball and the MLB Players Association have agreed to stage seven-inning doubleheaders starting August 1st. With a number of doubleheaders expected to take place on account of rescheduled games due to current and potential coronavirus outbreaks, as well as weather-related postponements, shortening games to seven innings was a compromise that came together quickly. Wow. Not only do we find out that the playoff format has changed on opening day, but in the middle of the year, they're changing the length of some of these games.
Yeah, I think it's probably necessary with what has happened. And yeah. I've been one of these people who, like, I'm not a traditionalist by any means, and I don't want all this stuff forever. But in a season like this, if you can get through it, I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I like the expanded playoffs is fine. The extra inning rule is, not great, but it's fine in a season like this. This is going to be necessary because pitchers are dropping like flies, like, across the league. Like, in addition to COVID, like, guys are getting hurt. I think the next thing they talk about, and we might find out about that next week too, is that they're just going to leave these rosters at 30 for like the full season. Like, I can't believe a month from now they think they're going to go to 26. Like, that's crazy to me.
My only concern, James, is we know how many rule changes Rob Manfred wants to implement. Is a lot of these things that are being pushed through, and everybody's saying, okay, it's a wild year. We're just hoping to get through the regular season, that he's going to try to carry over to next year.
Yeah, and you're probably right. In playoff expansion, that happens, right, in every league. And they say, like, oh, it's just one time. Like, no, once that money comes in, they're not going to go back. Will it be 16? I don't know. But it's not going to be what it was with the one-game playoff. And I think you could argue that, you know, six teams would be fine. Eight's probably excessive, but, you know, eight probably helps both local teams this year. And the Cubs are off to a good start, obviously. But, you know, for what we're following, the expanded playoffs is probably good, selfishly.
Early on, give me your impressions of your White Sox.
Well, it's frustrating. I mean, it's tough to, like, for somebody like me who really is pretty patient and over 162, you know, I didn't really know how to watch the team with a 60-game season, because you don't want to overreact, but all the games are so important. So, look, I think they're one of the eight best teams in the AL, if that does anything for anybody. Like, I think they're probably a playoff team. Are they better than Minnesota or Cleveland? I don't know. I don't really think so. Their pitching was really bad, obviously. I don't think it's going to remain that bad, but, you know, I don't think anybody should feel great about it. Their bullpen's been really good. I do think they're going to hit, and they opened up with those two opponents. So, you know, if they do what they're supposed to against Kansas City, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and, you know, some of the other teams, like, I think they're fine, but, you know, getting your head kicked in by Minnesota and then Cleveland, like, right away is not great when you're talking about a team that's, like, definitely, you know, people are talking about how they're, like, definitely in now, you know, now that there's 18. So you just, like, didn't want to bury yourself early. Yesterday's win was really important, and that's weird. Mm-hmm. Like, being the sixth game of the season is, like, a must win, but it kind of was.
It was super strange, because not only that, but just to calm down some of the noise around Lucas Giolito, because if he doesn't have a quality performance yesterday, some of the noise starts to drum up about, see, this guy's a one-year wonder. He's not a true ace.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like, the first, I mean, I've already heard it about, you know, people are questioning Yasmani Grandal, and, like, I mean, if you watched Giolito that night, it didn't matter who was catching him that first game. I mean, he's just really poor fastball command, and that's what all these young guys talk about, right? Oh, bad fastball command. But it's true. I mean, he couldn't command his fastball. He didn't have the breaking ball that night, and the Twins killed him. Because if you miss against them, they're going to kill you, and they kill fastball. So, you know, you fall behind in the count. They're gonna do that to a lot of teams. I think that was kind of, you know, I think some White Sox fans underrated Minnesota a little bit. Like, that team is going to do that to a lot of teams all year long. And, you know, it's a little bit tough to swallow, but, you know, it is a 60-game season. Like, while these are magnified in what, it's like two, it's the equivalent of 2.7 games, they do still have time. It just kind of felt like they didn't.
Right. And so what are we looking at? That little amount of time that in a 162 season, we're talking about, okay, we've seen 16 games, really. And it is so strange just to kind of change your mentality, because I'm like you too. Like, just, okay, calm down a little bit. Everything will be all right. You still believe in the talent. But, yeah, over 162, it's been over 16 games played. Let me ask you this, because as we kept waiting and waiting for the season to start in a weird way, it felt like the hype was getting greater and greater around the White Sox. Your spot, where you were mentally going into the year to where you are tonight after a 2-4 start, has anything adjusted or just even tweaked a little bit?
So I would say that I'm a little bit more worried about the starting pitching than I thought I would be. And some of that's like, I don't really know if Reynaldo Lopez was long for the rotation anyway, but without Michael Kopech, you know, now you're down to Gio Gonzalez, and then you're looking at maybe like Dane Dunning, or you're going to make a trade or something. Like, you know, you could be in trouble here quickly. Mm-hmm. I do think they're going to hit, so I'm not surprised by that. The one thing that I'm pleasantly surprised by, and look, everybody's talked about Luis Robert, right? And he's like even better so far than I was anticipating. And he's all, look, he's always going to have swing and miss in his game, but I'm surprised at the adjustments that he's made already, like early in the season. Like, he's, I'm really impressed by him. And obviously, like, they have him hitting down at seven because they don't, you know, they don't want to put too much on him, but he doesn't look overwhelmed at all to me. And that's, you know, that's a little bit surprising.
When are they hiring Ozzie?
Yeah.
It took like 3 days, man.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole thing is, and I don't know if you saw, like, Ozzie got mad at me on Twitter because I...
No, I didn't. I missed that.
I mentioned that he, you know, I said something about him. Well, because he's critical on that show and we're like not used to it. And he's doing his job and that's cool. Like, but, you know, that show wasn't always, it's not always like that. So having Ozzie there, like, criticizing lineups is like, oh my God, like, I'm not used to hearing this. And then, you know, he wrote a piece, or he didn't, he was... Joe Colley wrote a piece about him, and in it, it talks about how the White Sox know that Ozzie's changed. And, you know, he said, you know, he was talking about managing in the minor leagues, but then he said he could never do that because the fans would be complaining to Jerry about why their best manager is in the minor leagues. And it's like, come on. Like,
yeah,
so some of it's like, you know, some of it's like you're causing some of it, you know? So I don't, look, I don't think they're going to do that. I think they like Ricky Renteria. I think obviously there's been some lineup issues. I personally, and I think we've talked about this, I think managers over 162 are pretty overrated. But, you know, it's magnified. Like, decisions like that, and having Nicky Delmonico with more plate appearances than, you know, Yasmani Grandal and some other guys right now, like, yeah, it looks bad. Like, is it going to be like that for the whole year? No. But we've talked about it. Like, he's kind of managing the team like we have 162 games coming. And we don't. Right. We have 60. And this is the first time that he's had a team with expectations. And that was like a common question when I would come on shows, is what was I expecting from Rick Renteria? And I'm like, I don't know. So, you know, I think that's a storyline. It's not gonna get any easier if they keep losing, right? People are actually paying attention. And this is what they say that they wanted. So, you know, you have expectations now. So. Be prepared for people to complain when stuff doesn't go the way they expect it to.
Especially Sox fans. I don't think it's too much to ask for the optimal lineup on a daily basis when they are worth so many more games.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the Sox fans, I think, just, you know, we like being miserable, as you know. So
I know.
So some of it, like, if they were 5-1, like, they'd be more upset that they didn't have anything to complain about. But yeah, no, this is part of it, man. And, like, they're not lying when they say that Ricky's their guy and they like Ricky, but this is the first time he's managed a team that has expectations. So let's see. I understand hiding Luis Robert at the beginning, but if Luis Robert keeps doing what he's doing, like, he better be up higher in the order. You know,
this is what Ricky's done with all the guys when they bring him up. But you would expect him to treat it a little bit differently, and he's not. You're like you mentioned.
Yeah, and I think some of the young guys, like, I think, you know, optimistically speaking, like Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, Yoan Moncada, like, those are your guys, right, for the next 6-7 years, hopefully. And hopefully those guys are up getting the most plate appearances on the team and some of your other guys aren't. Jose Abreu is still a very useful player, but Jose Abreu was really bad against right-handed pitching last year. And Jose Abreu has hit third in the lineup all six games so far against six right-handed starters. And some of that might have to change eventually. And Jose's been, it's a good start. He's been pretty good. But he kind of decided to be a guy that, you know, he doesn't take walks anymore. He led the American League in RBIs, and he's trying to hit homers. So, you know, do you want that third in your lineup every day when you have other guys that are better? I think no. But, you know, those are just, like, more storylines, I guess. And then, you know, you have Yasmani Grandal's already had 2 days off, and he played 153 games in Milwaukee last year without a DH. So, and some of that's just lineup, or it's just roster construction, right? You went out, you signed a full-time DH, you have McCann. So, you know, stuff like that. But you know, you make the wrong decision in one game and you lose one game and it counts as 2.7 games in a normal season. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to frustrate people.
On the north side, I understand why when David Ross makes the lineup, people think it's Theo and Jed anyways. But on the south side, when I see Renteria's lineups on a daily basis, my first thought is Rickon's not making that lineup. That's all Ricky.
You think so. And you know, I've heard people have come back and they're like, well, those are his bosses. Don't you think they? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I hope they would stop him, but I don't know. Because people thought that he was just trolling the other day when he put Nick Delmonico at four. It was like, holy cow, like, what are you doing? You know, but, and look, like, it's, you know, the righty lefty thing, you know, and Nomar Mazara is out and Nick Delmonico probably wouldn't have been on the team and he probably won't be on the team once Mazara is back. But yeah, they left themselves a little bit bare there. Right. I mean, Nicky Delmonico being on the roster, like, isn't Rick Renteria's fault. But hitting him second or fourth is Rick Renteria's fault.
Correct. Joe Ostrowski, James Fox of Future Sox. I always try to squeeze in a little bit of Bears conversation because I know you're a passionate Bears guy and you follow this team very closely. Yesterday when we heard from Nagy and Pace, when Nagy mentioned that Foles is at a bit of a disadvantage, what looks like no preseason games, and he was really talking about no mini camp. And, you know, sometimes these coaches overblow that, but they like that. They like to see their new guys, new quarterbacks, get some work in. Do you think that Nagy was giving any sort of a clue if we have week one, September 13th against the Detroit Lions into the week one starter, or he was just being honest and just saying, by now, we expected him to have a lot more work with these guys.
Yeah, so I think he's being honest, but like, you know, like you've talked about, many other have, I don't know if he's making the decision. So what I've said is, like, I've been pretty clear about this. Like, I think, you know, unless Nick Foles gets hurt, if Mitch Trubisky's starting week one, I don't think the head coach and GM are on the same page, because I think Matt Nagy's done with Mitch Trubisky personally. And he went out and he got the guy that he wanted, and that's Nick Foles. Now, I don't know. I think you could argue it both ways. I think, you know, you could say that Mitch Trubisky needed preseason to beat out Nick Foles because he's, you know, he's probably the more like talented player, right? But Nick Foles is definitely the better quarterback. So I don't know. I don't know how Mitch Trubisky beats out Nick Foles unless the general manager says, like, we're starting Mitch Trubisky like one last time.
That's entirely possible. And I understand why people would take that from Nagy and run a little bit. But, and you know, I've been on record. I actually think Trubisky's going to start week one. We'll see. And they're both going to end up starting in my world. But as far as the Trubisky thing, it kind of makes me laugh. Like, okay, yeah, Trubisky has the big advantage because he's been on the field the last couple of years with these guys because he's practicing with them. And how has that helped him over the last couple of years? Like, it really was a nothing comment to me.
Yeah, and usually when NFL people talk, it's nonsense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he does know the guys better. I think Nick Foles just got here, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, there's some video on Twitter of him throwing to some receivers at Vernon Hills High School, but there he was throwing to literal receivers that go to Vernon Hills High School. So, you know, Mitch Trubisky went to renowned quarterback coach Jeff Christensen this offseason. You know, look, it's probably a year or two too late for some of that stuff. I don't think Mitch Trubisky's footwork is the biggest problem. I think it's obviously like processing, like once he's out on the field. And, you know, we'll see, man. I don't know. I mean, I think Nick Foles was obviously not everybody's first choice. And I think he's an upgrade to what they had last year. But
I think it was the coach's first choice.
Yeah, I think that when the fan base saw it, they were like, gotcha. You know, people were hoping for Cam Newton or anything else pretty much. And then it was Foles. But yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that's who they wanted. And I don't know. I mean, I try to look at this from the perspective of like, how does Ryan Pace buy himself more time?
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I don't know if playing Mitch does buy him any more time. Because if Mitch is bad again, like, I kind of feel like it's going to be more respected if he does like kind of what he did with Leonard Floyd and some of his other bad picks, where he just like admits defeat and tries to move on. I mean, if you can win 10 or 11 games somehow with Nick Foles, like he probably gets another quarterback. Like, and so a lot of people don't want that, but you know, it's probably what happened.
Yeah. If you can find some sort of a Band-Aid or something that works for you for 1 year, if you can, be an average offense, I think people would be thrilled with that at this point. And there was more news, not that that was news, but of course, Eddie Goldman, a couple of days ago, we find out that he's opting out of the 2020 season. And then this afternoon, the guy that was expected to be Goldman's replacement, John Jenkins, he's placed on the COVID-19 list. We expect him to be ready for the start of the season, but it kind of hammers home, James, that they need some D-line depth.
Yeah, they do. And he mentioned what? He mentioned Roy Robertson Harris and Bilal Nichols. Now, they do have, like, I think they could just play base nickel even more than they already do, you know, and just not have a nose tackle on the field. But, man, Eddie Goldman's a good player. And a lot of people, I kind of think it goes, you know, he's a little bit unheralded just because he didn't have a great year last year. But, man, he stops the run when they're in their base 3-4. Eddie Goldman's really good. And, you know, he's not as easily replaceable as some other guys. So when I saw that, you know, right away, you know, you cringe a little bit, but it's also, you know, I don't know if he's going to be the last one, right? So stuff could kind of just like keep happening, and it's kind of tough to, you know, be critical of anybody that's opting out, you know, for reasons like this one. So, you know, they're going to have to figure it out. There are a lot of D linemen on the market still. I don't know if that's what they want to do. But there are some names.
James Fox from FutureSox.com. Check out his work there. James, appreciate you jumping on tonight here on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Anytime.
Thanks, James. Follow me on Twitter at JamesFox917. Always a lot of great White Sox and Bears information if you are on Twitter. Cubs-Reds postponed this evening. That's why I'm here throughout the night. They called the game at about 6 o'clock. They were waiting for some reason and waiting, even though there wasn't a window. But, yeah, it's been raining all day in Cincinnati. And even if there was a window, the conditions would have been pretty poor. They would have been sliding all over the place, risk to injury out there. So they finally decide to call it, and Anthony Rizzo's calling Major League Baseball on their BS. Like, you've got us all cooped up for 8 hours today, and now we're not even going to play the game. So good for Anthony Rizzo. Good stuff there. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Let's hear from the Cubs manager, David Ross, and his mentality going into this game. No official announcement on a makeup date, by the way, and nothing official on what they're doing with the starting rotation, but you would expect it to just push Yu Darvish back a day since they're a man short anyways. We'll hear from Ross next on 670, The Score and the Radio.com app. Radio 670, The Score. Producing tonight, we got Jordan Malley and Chris Dickens. They were all excited about Cubs-Reds baseball with Yu Darvish on the bump, but that game was postponed. However, David Ross did speak with the media this afternoon preparing for this game, and he was like, yeah, they told us we're going to play. They kept everybody around. Anthony Rizzo's mad that he had to stay in the clubhouse. He doesn't like people. He doesn't want to be too close to them. And he doesn't think it's very safe. And I think Rizzo is 100% right. I lied about the he doesn't like people part. I just made that up. But let's hear from David Ross as the Cubs are still preparing for their next game with Yu Darvish. We expect him to be pushed back to have the Friday start against the Pittsburgh Pirates. But let's take a listen to Rossi with the Cubs media.
Guys have really stressed controlling what you can control, but you're still kind of subject to kind of what happens to other teams. What was your reaction to the Phillies essentially shutting down until further notice?
Yeah, just again, it's a continue. It just continues to heighten your awareness of what's going on and how delicate the situation is. We're trying to stay in our own little, you know, bubble and world here and trying to do everything that we can to keep ourselves safe and play the brand of baseball we want to and keep us and our loved ones safe. So, you see that and you realize just what a delicate season and issue we're having to work through. And it's a constant reminder of continue to do the things we've been doing, you know, wash your hands, wear your mask. You know, you just, it takes a lot of trust in your group and in one another to continue to push forward in such a unique environment when you see some of this stuff going on.
Speaking of that, Rossi, do you understand what the compliance officials will be? Do you have any idea exactly what their roles will be and when they'll begin to operate?
I have not heard the official what their roles will be or a date that they'll be appearing here. Not yet, Bruce. I don't know that.
Nico said earlier that he really hasn't left the hotel now that you've been there 4 days. Is that kind of the sense from most of the guys? It's just been hotel, ballpark, hotel, ballpark.
That's all you're going to be able to do. There's, I mean, there really is. This is, we talk about some of the mental challenges. It's there's a lot of downtime with your own thoughts in this world we're living in. But it also is refreshing to come to the field and be around your teammates and watch, you know, the starters sit over there and cheer guys on for nine innings. And you see the how their interaction with each other, you know, hearing great conversations from people about them talking about pitching or guys having conversations about what's going on with the pitcher. I mean, this is really because there's nothing else but each other. It's sparked a lot of great conversations and good baseball ones to me.
David, do you have to like talk to the younger players even more so about this? Because no one's gone through this, but for them, they probably feel more isolated than anybody.
They've been great. I haven't singled anybody out. I think for the totality of the group, I've all bought into what we're having to do and what's at stake and what's important. And we realize it's a short window and the sacrifices that everybody has to make. They understood that coming into here. So no, I don't think I've had to talk to any of the younger guys more than the veterans. I think I speak to the group as a whole because I try to treat everybody the same.
Rossi, I know it sounds crazy that you guys have already played 10% of your ball games, but as we go here and these weeks start moving, have you noticed that it's going to force you to have a shorter leash with some of these bullpen guys and making sure you can cover outs when you need them?
Yeah. I think the main thing with that is just continue to watch and learn and you know, we're wrapping our brain around now going into our seventh game today, a week worth of games. You know, we'll be able to continue to find out who can pitch for us in the big moments and who we may have to give a little bit more of a leash in certain times, maybe bring certain guys in if we're down multiple runs or something like that. You know, we're going to have to find these roles for these guys and they're starting to play out.
David, provided you get the game in, what are you hoping to see out of you today coming back off of Saturday?
Yeah, I think you is set up for a good start tonight. I just looking for him to get on top of the baseball, really finish. I thought he did a nice job of pitching the last time out. It just, you know, a shortened stance, some really long innings for him without, you know, really finishing, getting ahead of guys, but not really being able to put them away. Looking for that splitty to show up. That split finger, I feel like, is a dominant pitch for him when he's got that thing going. And on top of that, it lines up all his other pitches. And so seeing that finish to the split finger would be a little boost and let me know he's moving in the right direction.
David, will Ray's role be determined by how he performs when you first get him out there, or do you have something in mind?
Yeah, I think we'll put him in that group of somebody that can give us some length out of the bullpen. He's stretched out or was some starter depth. So he's a guy that we've got multiple options with him, but probably a guy to give us some length and he's a strike thrower. So, you know, can use him either ahead or behind. So, yeah, we'll see how that defines. Depends a lot down there of who's pitched a lot, where their everybody's innings are, all those things come into play.
Underwood gave you some quality yesterday, Derek. I mean, the first couple outings give up a home run, but it seemed like other than that, outings have been kind of clean.
Yeah, I talked to him in the outfield at length yesterday. I think the main thing for him is to continue to pitch. You know, we get in this scenario. He's given up two homers on two fastballs and fastball counts. And the main thing that I would tell him is continue to pitch. Now, that being said, there's also in a large lead game, you want to come in and pound the zone with your best stuff. So, but in this game now, just in general, you have to continue to pitch. When he's using that changeup and that breaking ball, he's at his best. I saw a lot more of that last night, which is very rewarding. He was a guy who threw really well for us in camp, and I continue to have confidence in him just as long as he continues to use his repertoire and don't fall into any or get baited into any traps with, you know, just pumping heaters in there, because major league hitters like to jump on the fastball. It doesn't matter how hard you throw.
Cubs skipper David Ross meeting with the media this afternoon as he was preparing for the Cubs and the Reds, but that game has obviously been postponed. No makeup date as of yet, and as expected, our very own Bruce Levine tweets out, Cubs rotation stays the same. Darvish will pitch tomorrow night against Pittsburgh. So that certainly makes all the sense in the world. Everything that Rossi said about Darvish still applies tomorrow night. You're just going to be going up against an easier lineup. So hopefully that's good news for Darvish and the Cubs tomorrow night. And you can catch it right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. At 8:20, addition to the show this evening, Cam Ellis from NBC Sports Chicago covers the Bears. He'll be joining me. Looking forward to that conversation. And next, Ian Happ. He had a couple homers, two homers, first three games on the season, and he has a weekly Thursday appearance on the Dan Bernstein Show. We're going to bring that back, hear what Ian Happ had to say next. Joe Ostrowski with you, 670 The Score and the Radio.com app. Joe, Sports Radio 670 The Score with you all night. There's no Cubs baseball because they called that game. Queen City just drowning this evening. Rain all over the place. It was starting earlier in the day, and it just never let up. So the Cubs hold on to first place in the NL Central with their 4-2 record. So then it becomes a, what do we got here? A five-game homestand. Yeah, that's a little strange with what happens with the schedule next week. So over the weekend, they've got three with Pittsburgh. Darvish starting tomorrow. It's Darvish, Chatwood, and Lester against the Buccos. Then they stay home for two more games against Kansas City. And then they go to KC for 2 days. So Monday through Thursday is a four-game set. It's not really a set there because they're doing two at Clark and Addison and then two in KC. So, you got to win these games, man. It's so silly. Like, just what we're used to talking about the ebbs and flows of a baseball season and what we have right here. But what we see is the next seven games, the Cubs have the Pirates and the Royals, two of the worst teams in Major League Baseball. You can't go 3-4, and you're kind of disappointed with 4-3. Feeling is you probably need to win at least five of those. And then see where you stand August 7th heading into a three-game series at St. Louis. So I did check the weather. I think we're clear tomorrow. No rain expected on the north side of Chicago. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670 The Score. Let's go back to the Dan Bernstein Show earlier today. And Dan started off his conversation with Cubs outfielder Ian Happ by just talking about what Reds broadcaster Tom Brenneman had to say, how even opposing broadcasters are commenting in a positive manner about the energy that you feel coming from this Cubs team to start the season.
I think the energy in the dugout has been awesome. It's something that I think everyone in the ballpark is taking notice to just because it is so quiet and we are bringing so much energy. And it's something that you have to do right now. There's nothing to feed off of in the stands. If we're not going to have fun with this thing, if we're not going to enjoy every second of it, then what's the point of coming to the ballpark?
It's audible. And especially, did I hear what I thought I heard? And that was an attempt to approximate Anthony Rizzo's walk-up song?
Yeah. We brought it on the road with us. I think he really enjoyed it. So whatever we can do to make him more comfortable.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. And it does seem that you personally settling in a little bit. That was a Sonny Gray on absolutely on top of his stuff last night, and you were able to get a barrel off of him. He was nasty.
Yeah, he was. He was really good. He just does a really good job of putting the curveball off the fastball, you know, mixing location the fastball around, not being too consistent. And, yeah, I was able to put a couple barrels on it yesterday and get it off. But the offense as a whole is looking awesome.
But let's not bury the lead here. After his brilliant opening performance, Kyle Hendricks has supplanted you as National League Player of the Week, the longest ever and probably an unbreakable record. We can just add it to the list, much like, you know, Cy Young's 511 victories or DiMaggio's hitting streak. Your run as NL Player of the Week will likely not be topped. Was it an orderly transition of power to Kyle Hendricks?
Yeah. I think it was 43 weeks, so feels good to have that standing record. If somebody breaks that, something will have gone terribly wrong. So I hope that is not broken. But to keep it in the family, to give it to Kyle, really awesome. I think I said this in the interview earlier in the week, but if we can keep doing that and passing Player of the Week around the clubhouse, that would be a good way to go.
Well, with other things getting passed around clubhouses, there are better things than others. How has the Marlins situation and, in turn, how that propagated with the Phillies and the Yankees, et cetera, how has that affected the day-to-day behaviors of you and your teammates?
I think it helped us with communication with the other teams. I think guys are being pretty transparent with one another just about what's going on in their clubhouse. If there's any issues at all, if there's any concerns. I know just what the Reds did before we came into town with Moustakas staying home, with Senzel staying home. We just applaud those guys for their diligence and for following the protocols. Even though they didn't have it, they never tested positive. It's little things like that that are going to keep all of us on the field. But it's the good thing is, besides all the Marlins positive tests, everybody else has done a great job with the protocols. The central where we're going to be playing has done a great job. And just the communication between teams going forward is going to be very important.
Does travel feel scary at all or intimidating?
You know, the Cubs have done a really, really good job with the flights, with sanitation, the hotel accommodations, and the way that we're being countryed, the having a place to eat, having a place to be outside, all those little things that makes traveling a little bit easier, a little bit less stressful. Because if you're cooped up and you can't do anything, and the accommodations are not giving you what you need to have a successful game, I think that would be very difficult.
What's being done on the union side regarding what happened with the Marlins and trying to prevent that and trying to make sure the union is an active participant in some of these discussions that are ongoing?
Yeah, the joint committee is doing a good job just relaying the protocols again. I think the idea that the testing is good for acknowledging when people are positive, for confirming, but the most important part of these protocols is wearing a mask, staying apart, and kind of treating everybody like they already have the virus so that we're preventing any type of spread if someone were to get it. And I think that's kind of the most important part of the protocols to make sure that we all stay on the field, and if there is an outbreak, it doesn't spread throughout the entire team.
I know we spent a lot of time talking about Kyle Hendricks, but really it was just as significant, if not more so, that John Lester had the performance that he did and able to throw no-hit ball despite having a different kind of pitching repertoire. It's fascinating to me to see, and I always look at comps and I look at pitchers in history who have gone from power to pitching out of, you know, guile and location and movement. And as stubborn as he's been, it looks like Pitch Lab might be his friend with finding a little extra velocity, finding a little extra movement. When he's good and when he's reliable, this team just feels so much stronger.
He was phenomenal the other night, and he's one of those guys that you will go to battle behind him every single day of the week, not caring what's coming out or what he's throwing. But you know that he's going to find a way to get a W. He's going to find a way to win baseball games, keep us close, because that's what he does. That's what he's been doing his entire career. And to see him throw no-hit baseball, that was really cool. And you know he's going to go out there every fifth day. He's going to give you everything he's got, and just absolutely love playing behind him.
And I don't know if you consider Nico Horner still a member of the compound or compound emeritus, perhaps, but he's had some really good swings. You know, this was a guy who was kind of forced into action, some emergency action pretty much last year, but he's looking increasingly comfortable and confident as a major league hitter.
Yeah, he's really impressive. I think just his ability to put the bat on the ball and find barrels, find holes, hit the ball hard up the middle the other way. I think it's really impressive. He does a great job of understanding the situation, of preparing himself with scouting reports. He's a great kid, and it's good to see him smashing baseballs over there.
What do you think of the Joe Kelly 8-game suspension? He's appealing it. He's going to be eligible to play today, but he throws behind Bregman, and then he strikes out Carlos Correa and mocks him and says, like, nice swing, bitch, or whatever he said, and they slap him with 8 games in a 60-game season.
Yeah, the one stat that I heard is that 8 games in a 60-game season is, I think, equivalent to about 21 games in a normal season. And I don't know that you would ever see a 21-game suspension for somebody who didn't hit an opposing player. It's a tough situation. I understand that the Major League Baseball wants to protect these guys, especially with what's happening right now, because they don't want any fights on the field. They don't want benches clearing regularly. But at the same time, 8 games were the equivalent of 21 games for a guy that didn't hit anybody. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure where the appeal is going to end up there.
And then there's the idea of all the benches clearing to accomplish I don't know what. It's because you can't fight, you know, and you guys talked about it. You can't brawl. You can't. And it's bad for everybody, and it theoretically could ruin an entire season. So what do we do here? I was thinking of the alternatives. That is it a dance off? Is it a mime competition? Is it the manager's rock, paper, scissors? You know, what can we do here if everyone's going to start to just stand there and puff out their chests?
Yeah, I there's no point this year to clear the benches. You're not going to be able to touch anybody. If you do, your suspension's going to look something like what Joe Kelly got. And honestly, teams can't afford that. In a 60-game season, you can't afford to lose a guy for 8 games. You can't afford to lose a guy for 5 games. You know, I think you just have to understand that we're all coming to play in this pandemic. We want to keep baseball on the field. We want to make it to the playoffs, and we're going to have to understand that. We're going to have to work together a little bit and just go and compete as hard as you can. But at the end of the day, let's get through this thing together.
It's sort of you're making your new normal is how it seems. And back to the compliment from Tom Brenneman, one thing that I've noticed in the television broadcasts is because there are fewer things that are going on in the building. You know, they can cut to a reporter who's standing in empty seats and it doesn't really do much. So all the cutaways are still you guys. It's you guys. It's the side shot in the dugout. It is what you guys are doing, what you're saying, and, you know, sort of where you're standing in between. So we're getting more of a look during the games at the dugout and these sort of these extended areas where you guys are all positioned. And I have to say, as much as we discussed in talking about the mental health aspect of some of this stuff, it seems like you would think it's hard to try to have fun, but whatever you're doing is somehow working.
Yeah, that was a big focus for us, was to make sure that we were having as much fun as possible and make sure that we were understanding that this is a game, and the way that we're going to get through this together is to thoroughly enjoy, you know, our 3 hours of game time and treat it as, hey, let's see how much fun we can have. Let's see how much we can enjoy this. And that's going to bring our team together and put us in a good spot because we have the talent to win a bunch of baseball games.
Is the noise after each pitch, are you trying to influence the umpire at all? Because it seems that regardless of what happens, there's something audible all the time with every interaction, with every moment in the game.
No, it's not about the umpire, actually. It's kind of, we try to stay away from the umpire just because you don't want to upset that guy, especially early in the game. But it's more for your hitter. It's more for your hitter. This is something that we did when there were 40,000 fans in the stands. You just couldn't hear it then. When you're in the batter's box and you feel the entire bench, the entire dugout going through that at bat with you, that every single pitch your teammates are locked in, it helps. It helps you stay locked in. It helps you have the confidence when you take a nasty pitch and don't swing and your teammates are all pumped up about it. Like little things like that, it really helps.
Does being back in Cincinnati mean anything to you because of the time you spent there in college?
Yeah, it's always great to come back for me. I love Cincinnati. I have still a lot of really, really good friends in the city. And usually my mom, she's in Columbus, Ohio. She's able to come down. Obviously, she can't right now. But it's always Cincinnati and Pittsburgh are two trips that I always love.
So I love this idea that you had, and I'm shocked that you actually mentioned it on your podcast, because this is one you might want to spring on people without mentioning it. So somebody hits a home run, and we all know the silent treatment of, you know, you ignore the guy, you turn your back, or you all head down to one end of the dugout and just to let the guy sit by himself. But you took it to another level. So you said, instead of the silent treatment, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's everybody in the dugout leaves the dugout, sits in the stands like they're fans, and then applauds until the player gives the curtain call and comes out and waves his batting helmet.
I think that would be incredible. I can't get my teammates on board with it. I think at some point at home we're going to be able to get there. But it's so easy right now to, you know, do whatever you want. You can run to the stands and it wouldn't affect any part of the game. But I think, especially at Wrigley, if everybody sprinted out of the dugout while that guy's running around the bases and was sitting right behind the dugout and gave him the standing ovation until he came out and curtain called, I think that would be awesome.
That was Ian Happ on the Dan Bernstein Show, just like every Thursday right here on Sports Radio 670. The Score, Cubs-Reds postponed due to rain. Yu Darvish will start tomorrow against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Joe Ostrowski with you till 10. Sports Radio 670, The Score. In about 20 minutes, we'll check in with NBC Sports Chicago's Cam Ellis to talk a little bit about the Bears. There's some more news today. You had Eddie Goldman, the nose tackle, opting out of the 2020 season earlier this week. And then today we find out nose tackle John Jenkins placed on the COVID-19 list, the third Bear to be placed on that list, Eric Salbert and also Artavius Pierce. So coming up next, you know, there are a lot of people listening to Matt Nagy yesterday thinking, oh, maybe he will start Trubisky week one. Like I've been telling you for a long time. Well, there are a few national guys checking in, and they have their takes on the Bears quarterback controversy. We'll get to that next. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score, and the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.